Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Ding! We used to do a bell. We haven't done a bell.
Haven't done the bell
recently.
Well, no.
So, good evening, and there you go.
There you go.
Depending on what calendar you follow, we either had a full moon on the 12th or last night, and it was the full moon for November is the full beaver moon. And
angry beavers,
and instead there's somebody sniggering in the background.
Yep.
And we'll introduce her in just a minute. So instead of doing a full moon ritual this month, somebody that we know pretty well and has been at our event, and we saw her just this past summer in Atlanta at the Mystic South Conference.
Good time.
Very good time. Very good workshops and music. But it's a conference. And because in Atlanta they know better than to have a camping festival in July because it's 250 degrees out. So they do conferences in nice, cool hotel rooms.
Yes.
Instead, so
people complained they were too cold.
Because we haven't had this author on in a while, I thought it would be a good time to have her on because I've been reading out of her books this year, and she has a book that came out later last year, and she's working on at least one book that I know of, and the book is Earthworks: Ceremonies in Tower Time, and this is a great book that has a lot of good practical work, and it's interspersed with story type telling, which I do like quite a bit, the allegorical introduction to some of this stuff, and she is Asheville's village witch, an author, folklorist, and let us welcome Byron Ballard. Kitty says hello too.
In the background.
So hello, Byron.
Hello.
Cats were asleep all day. It's nighttime, and one of them in particular gets really vocal when he gets the nighttime crazies. And so for anybody listening right now or later, you will hear catitudinal.
Well, cats are nocturnal, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
They are by nature, so...
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll just sit and relax with us in the evening. Other times, especially recently, because it's chilly, it's cold at night.
Yes.
And a couple of them are allowed to go out in the fence backyard. And once they have a little bit of that cold, they just get all crazy and stuff. And that's what we deal with at night.
Yes.
They also like to have their evening crack, we call it. It's a brand of snacks called Temptations, and I think they are. They are made with some sort of secret cat crack formula because they are highly addicted to them. So that hints the nighttime wailing as well. They want their kitty crack. So
yes, fine.
Yep. So you will be hearing that this evening, interspersed. So what have you been up to, Ms. Byron? We were just talking, and you've been all over the place recently, haven't you?
I have On the Road Again. I'm destined to be on the road again. Yeah, I've spent the whole year on the road. I'm currently on the last leg of my last seasonal tour. I've got one more event downstate in a few weeks. It's a semi-private event. I'm doing a Morrigan retreat. And then, you know, family stuff. Like I'm going to go down see my daughter in Charlotte and stuff like that. But basically, this was the end. I was just down at Florida Pagan Gathering and had a great time. They're a great group of people, and they always treat me like a queen, spoil me rotten, taught some classes, did some stuff. And I've got just a couple more little things here and there. I'm teaching a class in town Saturday in Asheville, so I will be back for that. Yeah, I've just been on the road. I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere, man, everywhere. And next year is going to be not as crazy. At this point, next year is pretty much planned out. But I'm going to go back and do some more field research in Britain next year. So that will be that'll be a big excitement, big excitement. And there is a potential tour to Sicily that will happen in 2021 that will be focused on goddess temples and joy and ecstasy and what that means in modern culture. So they can, y'all listening can look out for that. So that's another thing. And I do want to say that the book you just mentioned, Earthworks, was nominated for the Thomas Wolfe Literary Prize. And I'll find that out in January, whether or not it got it. But that is an incredible honor. Thomas Wolfe is one of North Carolina's favorite sons, writer-wise. And for my book, my little book, to be nominated was a surprise. It really was. But so I'm very honored. Whether I win or not, I'm terribly honored to have been nominated. And more stuff in the works, of course. I've got finishing up a book for Llewellyn on Appalachian folk magic. I've got another book coming out sometime 2021 that's going to be basically pagan permaculture. And then I'm working on a musical, which is a musical retelling of A Midsummer Night's Dream. I'm working on that with composer Brian Henke. I've just got a ton of stuff going on. And farming. Farming, as one does.
Yeah. As one does. I noticed all the pictures that you posted throughout the summer of all the stuff you harvested. And what we aspire to do, of course, it requires actually going outside and tending to the backyard and not just planting the seeds in the bucket and hoping for the best. You kind of have to, do things. But we have had
Go ahead.
We've had some hits and misses with some of the stuff that we've done. Some of the stuff we've discovered does do okay in buckets because we're in a townhouse, but then other things, as it turns out, you really should plant in the ground because they really do a lot better. Mm-hmm. And so I think based on how things did or and did not go year before last, was it year before last? Yeah, it was year before last, because then that fall was, no.
Last year. We did buckets last year.
It was last year.
Yeah, we did all the buckets last year, and the tomatoes were too big.
Yeah, it's hard. Tomatoes are hard. Tomatoes are just big old crazy weeds, and they need a lot of room.
Right, and so they need to be put in the ground. But, put in the ground.
They need to be put in the ground.
They do need to be put in the ground.
Put them in the ground.
Magic.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, it is a weird segue.
So funny.
Here's the segue part of it. Let's see. Tomatoes are a member of the nightshade family, and
yes.
Nightshades which I find fascinating. If you smell the green part of the plant, you can smell that it's clearly poisonous to a lot of animals. You know,
yes.
When you smell the leaves, the fruits are great, but the leaves are like, yeah, you can see why most animals wouldn't touch it, and there's only some types of caterpillars that will eat them. So there's your segue. Deadly nightshade, some people do actually grow it, and I don't know if they harvest berries or flowers as part of magical workings. I don't think they poison people, but I've heard of some people using them.
No, of course they would not poison people. Now, come on.
No, that would be bad.
That would be bad and illegal, and we don't ever do anything illegal.
We're not condoning that. No.
Not in any way. I got to tell you, it's so funny to me, though. There's like this fad right now with people. I have to grow a poison garden. Oh, I just can't wait to grow some Atropa belladonna. Oh, henbane. Oh, it's so wonderful. And I just think, what are you going to do with that? Henbane is a pain in your butt to grow because flea beetles love henbane. So you're going to have to do something to protect your henbane. You're going to have to spray it or dust it or put a little cage around it so the flea beetles can't eat it up. And then, oh, boy, you've got some henbane. Well, what are you going to do with it? Well, I just wanted to grow some poison. Well, okay. Oh, look, I grew a Atropa belladonna. Uh-huh. So what are you going to do with it? Well, I grew it. Okay. Well, you know, you could grow a tomato in that same place. You could at least eat the damn tomato. You're not going to be able to do anything. Well, are you going to mix flying ointment out of belladonna? Yay, call me when you do. I want to try some of it. Just let me know. But, yeah, it's like everything in our set of spiritualities. There are fads, and if suddenly everybody's doing this or they're doing that, you just think, well, is it going to stick? Are you going to do it often enough to get any good at it? Or, nope, now you're off to the next thing. Okay, all right.
In fact, there's somebody that we know that is a student of somebody we know around here, and she is known to do that. So she was supposed to be a student under our friend in our friend's Wiccan tradition, and she flittered off to something else, and I think was exploring maybe druidry for a while, and then she flittered off to somebody else who does have a circle in a tradition. It's based, I guess he does some stuff where some people are invited to others. You have to be like a member and stuff. You know, it's an oath bound.
Right, like,
and
like inner and outer court stuff.
Yeah, I think it's basically the way it was set up. And so she, I think, do stuff with this group, and then there was somebody else, I think it was Obod or something, and so she's flittered around from place to place and has not really stuck with one particular thing or another, which means that you don't ever really learn long term from somebody and get the full breadth and depth of that person's knowledge.
Nope. It means you can just go hither and yon, and when something's too hard or it's going to require me to work a little bit more, then suddenly I don't do that anymore. Now I do something else. Okay, that's fine. Whatever gets you through the night. But I'm just tired of people playing at what I do. I'm going to play at this for a while, and then I'm going to do some Santeria, and I just think, enjoy that. It's a powerful tradition, but they're not going to put up with you waffling around. Anyway,
going out, all of these do require some level of practice and attentiveness. Now, there are people that I know that are pagan or Wiccan, and they've studied it, but they don't do metaphysical work or magical work. It might be as much as maybe meditative type things. They don't do spell work, and that's fine.
Yep.
But if you are a person who wants to be part of a tradition that also includes doing some sort of magical work, then you do kind of need to take the time to learn those practices and techniques. And the first thing to learn is to how you keep your head screwed on straight. And
yes.
And that leads us to grounding and shielding. And this book, in the early part of the book, talks about that. And there's a few different techniques that you talk about in it. One of the first, when we were baby pagans or baby witches, witchlings.
Witchlings.
Back in the 90s.
New shiny little witchlings.
I don't remember which book it was that we first heard about grounding and shielding, because it's still not talked about.
Probably a Scott Cunningham book then.
I get maybe,
yeah.
Maybe.
If it was back then, probably.
Yeah. But you don't, and, you know, we have a library full of all kinds of books that we've collected by various authors. The title might catch our attention, and we'll read the book, and they'll be like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And maybe we will keep it. Maybe we will donate it. We've donated a number of our own books to the Operation Circle Care, which we used to do circles, Circle Sanctuaries, Operation Circle Care. That's where you give.
Donate things for care packages for troops or pagan military.
Yeah. That's very nice.
And so we have given some of the way that, like, well, maybe somebody else will get something out of this.
Uh-huh.
Or we'll trade them in for other interesting and weird books, like the Foxfire books that we found at a used bookstore. It's called McKay's up here in the Manassas, Virginia area. It's a huge used bookstore where you bring in your books and you get credit. And then you can go shopping for other books.
Buy more books.
And we have like four of those Foxfire books, which are really interesting, practical, folkway techniques on all kinds of things. And intermixed with that is stuff about haints and ghosts and a few other odds and ends on things. So in all the books that we have, though, and we've read, the idea, the concept of grounding and shielding isn't talked about too terribly much. The only other author that does talk about it still quite a bit is Christopher Pinczak.
Uh-huh.
And he actually teaches that.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
well,
you don't hear about it.
Yeah, well, you're going to find it kind of old school teachers. Old school teachers. Teachers of the old school. There, that's better, isn't it? Teachers of the old school. They're going to start with basics, the absolute basics, because everybody wants to, like, well, but why can't I raise a demon? Well, because you don't know how, and even if I told you how, it would not be safe for you, you idiot child. So I started teaching this really heavily. Y'all know that I do a sex magic curriculum called Honey on the Stones.
Right.
And people would take it. And my assumption would be that they understood how to do magic, because the sex part is just a way of raising energy, like drumming or chanting or whatever. But if you don't actually know how to do magic, you're going to be lost. It's not just about sex. It's about magic. And I discovered that way too many people don't know how to do magic. They've never been trained. They think of it as something that's like a D&D. I'm a level 42 elf mage, and I do magic. And yeah, but how do you do magic? Well, I mean, I don't, because, I mean, it's D&D. So anyway, so what I've started doing a class called Simple Practical Magic. And it's just,
okay,
here's how you ground, here's how you shield, here's how you set some wards, here's how you gather some energy without using your own personal life force. I mean, it's the stuff that we learned, really, you're exactly right, when we were witchlings. But I encounter people again and again who go, oh, huh, well, that sounds easy. And I go, it is easy. You just have to practice it. It's not, magic's not hard. Any idiot can do it, including you.
And it requires being mindful about what you're doing,
mm-hmm,
and being present in the moment about what you are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking a lot about types of protective work, and again, shielding comes into play with that. Shielding is a very simple thing to do for the individual, but then if you need something to keep your home or your loved ones or any property, and yes, I do include vehicles in that because we are in them so much that you have to be able to do protective work as well.
Yeah.
So that you can create,
yeah,
a shield
like
around
our houses.
Stuff. Right.
Yeah.
And so this leads me to the baneful magic discussion, and what kinds of things, well, I'll back up a little bit. What do you include in this broad topic of baneful? What kinds of magical practices are we talking about?
Okay, well, let me do a little backstory for me, in that I call it bane work. I don't call it black magic because I think that's racist. But in addition to that, we have this notion now in our love and light bringer society that anything dark is negative and bad, and we can't go there. Ooh, we can't go there. Well, in the dark is when healing happens. It's certainly where gestation happens, and it's where we rest. And we have to rest. Just as the earth has to rest, we have to rest. So I never call it black magic or dark magic or anything like that. I just call it bane work. Because the other thing I teach is magic is just the using of energy. So if you use electricity in the morning and you put bread in a toaster, it will toast your bread. And if you stick a fork in a light socket, it will toast your ass. Because it doesn't care. It's a force that doesn't really have an opinion about anything. It's,
yep,
a tool that you use. So I want to be really clear about that. And the other thing is, I use bane work as an extreme healing modality. So I don't use it. It's not three bent over women at midnight in a cauldron tightening their sphincters and shaking their bony fists and exclaiming, "You will pay for this, you miscreant." It is just as chemotherapy is a really, really hard healing modality. Amputation is a healing modality. It's not pleasant, but it's healing. My beloved niece last year in 2018, she's a type 1 diabetic. And she got an infection, and the choice was to let the infection run its course and probably kill her or to amputate part of her leg. That was an easy decision in a way, because it is better to have a one-legged niece than a dead niece. So that was the healing modality, hard though it was, and still is on her. She's here, and we're all grateful for that. So I teach it as healing. And the reason I do that is because I'm a folkloric magical practitioner. And when you do that kind of work, you don't have the protection of Annette Harm None or the so-called rule of three or any of that stuff. None of that applies to folkloric work. It just doesn't. And so you need to do it. You need to create it and aim it and produce it in a way that doesn't fly back in your face. And so when you look at a situation or a person and you're going to have to do something fairly stringent, you have to look at how that's going to heal either the person or the person's partner or the situation, or how that is going to, how you can make that healing rather than punitive. And when you approach it with that attitude, it is easily done. And you don't have things flying back in your face. You don't have grudges, none of that. You are just doing the healing work that you know best how to do. And it includes things like bindings. I'm a big proponent of the raw egg binding. And it's important that people understand that in this work, you're not binding yourself to another person. That's the most ridiculous concept I ever heard of. Why would you do that? So if people want to know how I do an egg binding, they can go to YouTube and put in Byron Ballard egg binding, and there's a little video of me showing you how to do an egg binding. I think banishing is important, and I have what I call 9 levels of Bane, and some of them are not even what anyone would consider Bane work. It's I'm not giving that thing any energy. That's number one. I'm not giving it any energy at all and ignoring it. That's making a decision on what you're going to do in the situation. And your decision is, I'm not doing anything. And it goes all the way up to a level 9 Bane, which is a finishing Bane. And there's every permutation in between. And I use tools sometimes, and sometimes I don't use tools. It just depends on what it requires. I was at a friend's house many, many years ago now, and we heard as a group, we were celebrating Beltane, and we heard as a group that some people were coming back into the area that we had gotten rid of several years before because they were just gossiping, awful, awful people. And someone whispered in my ear, have you heard that so-and-so is moving back to the area? And I kind of gritted my teeth and grounded myself deeply and put my hand out and said, get me a mason jar. And it was like being in the operating theater because it was like, mason jar, stat! And somebody slapped a quart mason jar in my hand, and I walked around the circle and I said, spit in this. And the whole group, with the exception of one young man, spat in it. And then several of us went inside and we added some other things to the jar. And those folks, they did actually come back about 3 years after that, but they came back as Christians. So it was all fine.
Oh, wow.
That's really funny. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But
so was there any significance to you said there was one young man who didn't spit in the jar. Was there any significance as to why he didn't, or was just didn't?
Oh my gosh, he was so adorable. He was dating the daughter of one of the women in the coven.
He had just come
to eat some food for Beltane, and to hang out with his sweetie. And he's a very Christian young man. He literally. Put his hands over his chest, fold his hands over his chest, and he stepped back and he said, no, ma'am. And I said, good boy.
Okay.
All righty. Don't do anything you're
all righty
then.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I say that when I talk about, I teach my beginning Bane work class is called The Joy of Hex. And in it, I tell people, some people are called to this work. And if you're called to this work, you'll excel at it. And you'll find the ways to do it that work. If you are not called to this work, don't do it. Just simply don't do it. Because if you think it's going to get you some kind of weird brownie points at the next festival because you know how to do an egg binding, well, it won't. And not if you're not comfortable with it. Not if it makes you feel like you're doing something icky or bad. Yeah. So if you're not called to it, don't do it. It's with any kind of magic. You know, you should learn the basics and then find what sort of magic you're called to do.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the hour, we mentioned some of these plants that...
And you've got your jar of pokeweed. Upstairs.
I love pokeweed.
I've never tried eating it because I don't know at what point the leaves become too big to be able to eat safely.
Right.
And then I also don't know if cats have peed on it, so there's that too. So.
Cat pee.
Yeah, right.
But I've read for years that you can make a poke salad.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that you can. I just don't know how small, how tender. It
along
says you can use the tender leaves, but I don't know how small that is.
Right.
So.
Well, just like, what else is it that you can use? Not thistle.
No, it was.
Yeah, thistle.
No.
Leaves from thistle, yeah, you can, you know, put it in the soup and stuff. They apparently have a lot of iron.
And they're good for vitamin C, so
yeah.
You can do it. You just kind of need to be mindful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
the thing about poke is if you get it before the leaves unfurl, when it sets up that beautiful light green stalk, and you can see that the leaves have formed and it's getting ready to blossom out. At about, I'm holding out my hand now, maybe 6 inches. And even though it's called poke salad, you don't eat it raw like salad. You need to cook it. You need to boil it 2 or 3 times.
Oh, you do need it.
And,
okay.
Oh, yeah. And then maybe saute it with a little olive oil and garlic.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, it's yummy.
Otherwise, it's the berries can be used for purgative types of things and magically for purgative types of things.
Exactly. Well, the folkloric use in Appalachia is that once the berries are fully ripe, and that's when they're that shiny, dark purple, and they're ever so slightly squishy, you can have one a day until frost. And that's supposed to be good for arthritis and rheumatism and stuff like that. And that's a traditional folkloric use. But I know people that do it more than that. But again, I am a magical herbalist, not an herbalist you should trust with what you should take for what disease. That's not what I do.
Right. Medicinally speaking, yeah. And what I did, because there happened to be two really big plants, one inside the fence and one outside, and when the berries were ready, when they were really dark and slightly squishy, yeah. I gathered them up and I smashed them in a sieve and put them in a jar and added a decent amount of vodka to it because I did need to make sure that it wasn't going to get gross and fuzzy and manky. And
yeah,
I got
it
up. Yeah, because, I mean, why go through all the effort if it's going to get fuzzy with mold? So
yeah.
I did intentionally, A, so that you can use it for a variety of things, but I did it as an ink. So if there's any stuff to, I can write symbols on paper. I can, in fact, I'll probably be doing something this weekend since the moon is, and I do.
Waxing. Or waning.
It's starting to wane. I personally, for me, I like to wait a few days after a full moon when it's on its more of its waning cycle. And I'll do something and paint some symbols outside as well. And so I like to use bind runes. So I'm going to put some bind runes on our inner fence. And I'm curious to see how much rain it'll take for the stain to wash away.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, because I don't know, And
I have several friends with gray hair who use poke to dye their hair in the fall. Now, it washes right out. It doesn't stay in for very long, but it's very vibrant.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it'll stain your fingers, too. You have to scrub
yeah.
them pretty well. But
and then there was a scary thing on one of my herbalist Facebook pages, I guess, that I am on, where this inexperienced person had gathered a whole bunch of pokeberries, thinking they were elderberries, and was getting ready to make a nice elderberry tincture. People were like, no, those are not elderberries. You will kill somebody. Stop it. Stop it right now. Which in here,
yeah.
let's just say that if you are interested in any kind of herbalism, the best thing you can do is get a very good book on identifying herbs in your area, and better yet, work with a certified herbalist
right.
to know what's what. There. There's the advertisement for Herbalist Guild of America.
And there's...
Oh, yeah.
There are a number that live in various states. There's the conference in your state that happens in the fall. The Southeastern was the Wise Women's Herbal Conference.
Yep.
I can't remember the name.
Southeast Wise Women Herbal Conference. And there's a Midwest Conference. There's a Northeast Conference. There's herbal conferences all over and lots of herbal. I mean, you just Google herbalist near me and something's going to come up. We have a bunch of herbal schools in Asheville. In fact, we like to say you can't throw a rock here without hitting a witch, an herbalist, or a massage therapist. Or now a brewery, because we have thousands of breweries,
yeah.
thousands.
But I brought up the pokeweed because it is something that is, it's a weed. It is something that most people wouldn't think about keeping around because it's big. And it grows big and ungainly
yep.
in places you don't want it to. And, you know, yes, you can be all cool. You can be part of the cool kids club and grow henbane or belladonna or other such foolishness. Or you can
take a walk
or go into your kitchen and some of the same herbs that you cook with you can also use for protective work and all kinds of healing work and banishings and bindings. And in fact,
oh yeah.
Yeah. And who wrote it? Oh, Dorothy Morrison, who also does not have any compunction about,
baneful work,
not doing baneful work. Cause she does it. Wrote a freaking book, and the new book, I think it's a new edition of the book, they took the little witch's boots off, which I thought was funny. I have that version, and it's there or in a class that we sat in on of hers many years ago, and she talked about putting people on ice.
Yeah.
And I personally like that. Yes, it is a type of binding, but when tempers are heated and there can be aggressive emotions floating around, that can be a good way of cooling down a situation or stopping a situation from getting worse.
Yeah. In fact, in a situation where you are thinking to yourself, dude, chill out. You can just take that into your own hands and chill dude out.
Yep.
Right. And
I don't have a problem with that. a lot of people will point to, oh, but what about interfering with someone's free will? Well, number one, we don't have free will. Anyone who lives in a capitalist society as we do has no free will. Not really. So I don't worry about that at all, about interfering with someone's free will. And also because if you have the skills and the wisdom, and I'm not saying I got the wisdom, don't quote me on that one, but if you've got the skills and you can help in a situation, it's good to do that, I think. But I also want people to be aware that sometimes, even with the best intentions, your magic's not going to work. And I tell my students, if someone says to you, my magic never fails, then that person either doesn't do a lot of magic or they're lying to you. Because sometimes magic fails, and it for a variety of reasons. And I have this thing that I call 1-2-3 brick wall. And so I will go at a situation fairly lightly. It's like, oh, I'll do a nice egg binding. That'll be fine. And if that doesn't do it, then I'll go a little deeper. I'll look what the moon is doing. I'll check the outer planets. I'll do all that stuff and hit it one more time. And then if that doesn't work, then I'll go full throttle. I'll bring in the divines that I work with. I'll raise an altar. I'll do all that kind of high magic stuff, and I'll throw everything I've got at whatever it is. And if that doesn't work, that's what I call 1-2-3 brick wall. If I hit a brick wall, it means the work was not my work to do. And somebody else needed to do it, or the person that in question needed to go through the situation to get whatever they needed to get for it. But if sometimes your magic, though well-intentioned, doesn't actually work.
Right.
Sad.
It is. But there can always be larger forces at play. Or
yep.
The person that you're trying to help, maybe it's that the person needed to do that working themselves as part of them learning how to, I don't know, stand up for themselves or be more proactive, whatever. Or they had to learn a life lesson. And that can be really hard for people to understand. That.
Yeah.
And especially when it comes to healing work, because some people have this idea that all they have to do is, and I see it all the time, sending you love and light, sending you love and light. Okay. or you could send me $500 to help me pay for my bill, my medical bill.
Or come over and make a bowl of.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, instead of sending love and light, you could come over and bring me, a big giant vat of chicken soup.
Don't even have to come over. Just do DoorDash or Grubhub.
Oh, there you go.
From Panera. You know, come on. This is the 21st century. You don't really have to go to somebody's house to get them chicken soup. Just go online, go to, Panera, place an order, have it delivered to the house, have some chicken soup. There you go. Heard you feeling bad. Have some chicken soup.
Yeah. And that, boy, that just requires setting an intention and just doing the work. And in that case, it is very practical healing work. Here, have some chicken soup.
And
I added some extra schmaltz.
And that's a little more, there's more energy involved with that. Even if you're just going online and doing a DoorDash, Grubhub, Uber Eats, whatever thing, to have it delivered, you're putting energy into that action, with the intention of helping somebody that you know. So, that it's getting out there, and that's gonna help in the overall energetic kind of flow of things and help them,
And if you're it's funny you should mention it, because if you're a magical practitioner, you're actually setting your intention because you're thinking about that person.
Yeah.
And what does this person really want? This is their favorite stuff, and I'm gonna have. I think I'm going to add a big fat loaf of bread to that as well, or maybe some bagels, so that they don't have to worry about going out to the grocery store while they're sick, blah, blah, blah. And there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, that doesn't take a lot of time. People are always saying, oh, but I'm so busy. I'm so busy. Yep, we're all busy. We live in a culture that requires busyness of us in some way. But I got to tell you, the satisfaction of knowing that a, well, you're not satisfied knowing that a friend is housebound, but when you know someone is housebound for a little while, the satisfaction of creating a whole flotilla of little disposable containers of food, and even just going, knowing they're contagious, just saying, I'm leaving it on the porch, don't come near me, I love you. The satisfaction of doing that is so much bigger than any time you may peel away from your busy schedule to do it. It just feels good.
Right. And the idea, like I was saying about, like you know, ordering, going online, like if we live 1,000 miles away, if we hear that you're sick as a dog and you just can't do nothing, you know, it's okay, it'd be awesome if for us to pick up from Manassas, Virginia, and come down to Asheville and say, here, have some soup, you know, and we would love to do that.
Right.
But practicalities are, it might be, you know, well, I can't do that because we're so far away, but I can do this for you. Okay, here you
yeah.
go. I'm going to do more than just send you love and light and strength and healing. I'm going to send you some soup. Or I'll, I don't know, find a liquor store that delivers or something. I don't know, something. If,
yeah, exactly. And the thoughtfulness of that goes a long way towards reconnecting our communities, which are so, we are so fragmented now. It's difficult. It's difficult to be online with our fragmented communities, watching them tear each other apart over all kinds of things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes you just have to step back and say, I'm not going to be part of that argument, and kind of move on
yeah.
to do something else, because I'm not going to change anybody's opinion of
just
it. Or I don't have an opinion other than by saying, hey, I'm sorry you went through this.
Yeah.
There you go. And
yeah.
So what
Boy,
kinds
that
of
sucked.
Things...
Yeah.
What kind of things do you find yourself doing typically during these dark months of the year? So, again, we've talked about your garden, and you have I don't even know how many acres you have. I don't have a feeling that, a sense that you're living on this great big spread, so I don't think you have a lot of land around your house. But
no,
you seem to...
I really don't. I've got good gardens, but they're not big gardens, but they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be preparing for the next season. I'll be weeding, doing a lot of pulling the last of the weeds out and putting in compost and mulch and maybe some fertilizer. I've got a friend who's got goats and chickens, and I get fertilizer from her, poops from her, and just get the beds ready. The wheel of the year, I think, it sounds like I changed the subject, but I didn't. The wheel of the year is this really elegant thing. So we have two solstices, two equinoxes. In between, we have these cross-quarter days. And they are the time to plant, the time to tend, the time to harvest, and the time to rest. And so I take this time to rest pretty darn seriously. And I'm going to do laundry. I'm going to darn socks. I'm going to get rid of clothes that don't fit anymore. I'm going to donate those someplace. I'm going to write. I'm doing a lot of writing. Obviously, I'm doing a bunch of books and a play and stuff. And I'm going to reconnect with people that I love that I haven't been able to be close with because I've been on the road all year. So I take that wheel of the year seriously. And we are so silly in Western culture that at the deepest, darkest time of the dying year, when we should be resting, we have Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. We were out and being loud and big and bright and whatever. And it gets dark here at like 5:30. I want to go to bed by 6. And then wake up, you know, when the sun comes up, whenever that is. I don't know. I want to sleep. I want to get some rest.
Yep.
I hear you.
We don't get nearly enough sleep in our culture. Not nearly enough. And I when I teach, I sometimes say, if you can't sleep, at least rest, because your body gets almost as much from you just lying on your back, breathing deeply for 40 minutes as it does actually get into REM sleep. So rest instead of just pushing on and drinking another power drink or more coffee or, in my case, black tea. You know, I'm the queen of the Earl Grey. Just give me some more Earl Grey. I'll get through it. It'll be fine. Well, it's not fine. Your body's got to rest. So,
yep.
There. Naps. More naps. Lots of soup.
We just made soup the other day.
I love soup. Yeah.
We threw some squashes together.
Butternut squash, some pumpkins.
Yeah.
Yum.
We roasted them.
Yeah.
And because I think I've seen lots of recipes where you go through the effort of cutting up the squash or the pumpkin, and then if it's raw, but then you have to take the.
To cut the rind off and all that stuff.
That's a pain in the butt.
Just roast it and peel it out.
Right. Turn
it
to the soft and squishy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
that's what I do. I mean, it's hard to cut a great big squash if it's like a winter squash. You got to be careful with the knife so you don't stab yourself or whatever. But, just put that in you can put it in the microwave, but you can put it in a pan with like a water bath underneath. And, gosh, it's so delicious and full of vitamins.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, and roasted root vegetables. Oh, my gosh, I could eat roasted root vegetables till the cows come home. Carrots and taters and sweet potatoes and parsnips and, you know, anything that grows underground, beets, rutabagas.
Yeah.
I just chop them up, put some olive oil and a little bit of salt or whatever, and garlic and onions, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, and put it in the oven at like 325 until the hardest thing is soft. Oh, my gosh, how delicious is that? I want to make it right now.
Our cats aren't happy with us when we do that because we don't have any meat to share. We have moochie cats. They come up and they're like, "But give me!" We're like, "We have nothing. See, it's just vegetable."
Cats don't eat.
We're having vegetables.
No.
Yeah, no. They might if it had been soaking in like turkey fat all night. They might at least lick it.
Yeah.
Or maybe butter. We had a cat that used to lick.
Oh, he would knock the butter dish off of the counter to get to the butter dish. We went through
I would laugh about that, but I myself love butter. Just, I love it. So that when I do, like, butter my bread or something, then I lick the knife so I get all the butter. Because I love butter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was a cat after our own heart. He fit in our house well. He really did. Butter and bacon.
He had a bacon fetish as well, so.
That's a fetish I can get behind.
We had to cook extra bacon, or he would not leave us alone until he ate all of our bacon. So,
But
at this time of the year, more sleep. The introspective work, the quiet time work would be reading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are bad about buying books and then never reading them. We have books by.
Yeah.
So, sitting down with a good by somebody.
And I want to also give a shout out to, if you have the space and the little extra money, go to the thrift store and buy yourself an exercise bike and stick it in your house, and you can watch that wonderful old movie you've been meaning to see, or that wonderful documentary on mushrooms that I'm dying to see. And you can sit and ride the bicycle and watch that movie and get a little exercise. That won't hurt you either. That won't kill you.
Was that the thing that you just posted a little bit earlier on Facebook?
That mushroom thing? Oh, yeah. Wasn't that cool?
I just saw the picture in a little blurb. I'm going to have to go back to your page so I can get it and watch it myself. It is, it looks cool. Oddly, interestingly, well, maybe, and not coincidentally, one of the things that I kept seeing when I took my students to the local park where we have our event, Prince William Forest Park, at the southern end of that is where all the main trails are, and I take my environmental science students there every semester, for a field trip, and one of the things we really saw a lot of this time around, more than other years, was the variety of different fungi. Because typically on trees, you only see maybe one or two types, and this time around, there seemed to be some that were distinctly different.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about this with the relation to food webs and the importance of decomposers, and it's likely that none of that stuff is edible, of course, if you're even thinking about it. Buy a book and learn what is.
Go out walking with somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
take
sure
a walk with a mycologist. It's romantic. And then you won't die. It's good.
That's right.
Yeah, because they tend not to do well with the liver, a lot of them. But I like them just because they're cool and interesting. And they are this critical part of these little quiet players, and they quietly do their thing, and they are so important for ecosystems, and they're often ignored, and, ooh, what's that weird-looking thing on that tree? Well, that's a this, and you see it because the tree is decaying, and as it gets softer, then all these other animals will start to eat it, and once it falls over, then it becomes nutrients for the other trees that are alive, blah, 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 blah. So,
yeah.
It's a cool.
I love it. And they're also beautiful. The colors are amazing. They pop up overnight. There's just everything about them. If you haven't read it yet, I want to recommend Paul Stamets' book, Mycelium Running. Brilliant.
Can you spell his last name?
Stamets.
Okay.
Cool.
Cool. And
yeah, it's very good.
Can we get a book about, can I do with the
spirit? Well, yeah, as a matter of fact,
yeah.
On the mystical end of things, it just so happens that there is somebody else that we know who is a writer and she's written a few books. She lives out west in Oregon, and her name is Lupa Greenwolf, and you can do work. Another thing that I think is cool to do at this time of year is you read a book and focus, if you want to focus on doing something, then focus on meditative work.
Absolutely.
If you're in any sort of shamanic-oriented work, you can work on finding and working with totems. And she has this book called Plant and Fungus Totems. Fungus Totems.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of this.
Because, you know, people talk about the totem pole and stuff. Well, you could have a totem fungus.
I love it.
The totem aspect of plant fungus and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just so beautiful. You go to a pagan gathering, and if you talk about those kind of, you know, spirit beings or whatever, you know, everybody's like a wolf, bear, raven. But what if you just said, Amanita. That's Amanita is my spirit totem. People go, death angel. Got it. I understand you completely.
Or Artemisia vulgaris.
Yes. Yeah, they're beautiful, I think. And we're finally getting beginning to get an appreciation for what fungus does and what mycelium does. It's thank goodness, finally. Here at the end of all, we're getting some information. And I say us, meaning like the three of us and the people listening to this, but, you know, there's people still watching Dancing with the Stars and hoping that somebody will make America great again. Somebody, somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Bless your hearts.
Bless their hearts.
That's a whole other afternoon topic.
For sure.
Yeah, y'all just need to come down to Asheville when we have clear roads, and we can do that, and we will. Or I can meet you halfway. What is halfway between Asheville and where you are? Somewhere on 81. I'll meet you somewhere on 81. How's that?
I was going to say Stanton, but Stanton is like, I'd take or leave Stanton.
Now don't be dissing Stanton, because Stanton has Mrs. Rowe's pie shop, or Mrs. Rowe. I don't know how she pronounces it. Oh, my God, the pies.
The pies?
In Stanton, exit 222 off Highway 81 North.
There you go.
I go there a lot.
It's actually 3 hours from our house, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I've been wanting to go down the store that you're typically at when you're not traveling around and going up and down the eastern seaboard or other places.
Yes, is the Asheville Raven and Crone on Merriman Avenue in Asheville, North Carolina. It makes no pretenses about being a new age shop it's just a witch store with a lot of great supplies for your basic everyday garden variety witch person. It's lovely. It's a beautiful store. Lisa Sven, as I like to call her, Lisa and Michael have done an amazing job there, and the staff is incredible too. So get on down. Come on down to Asheville Raven and Crone. And of course, I'm also with. Yeah, I'm usually there on Tuesdays reading tarot.
Okay, yeah.
And I also work with, as you know, one of the founders of Mother Grove Goddess Temple, also in Asheville. So that's my religious piece versus my practical magic piece.
Right. And then you're spending time reading and writing and researching and
shoveling
preserving.
Manure.
And sleeping.
Yep.
When I can, yeah.
And so what is some of the other things, places that you're going to be at before you settle down, you hunker down for the winter? You're going to a few other places?
No, I'm done. I'm doing a private thing downstate in a few weeks. And I'm going to go on Sunday and do Thanksgiving with my daughter in Charlotte, because she can't come to the family Thanksgiving. And then, I don't have any more festivals.
Okay.
Yay, until the end of February, when I'm doing Gaia's Womb. And I should have all of that on my Facebook page. Maybe on my website, if I manage to get off my tail and get that updated. But people can find me on Facebook under my name, Byron Ballard. But I also do a thing called Village Witch A Wandering, and that's like my professional page. So you can go there and like it and follow what I'm doing.
Okay.
Without hearing the crazy political rants that I go into on my personal page.
I hear you. Definitely. All righty then. And you've got books, so are any one of them close to being ready to be published? Maybe the Llewellyn book next year?
No, it's going into... I'm doing the first submission of the manuscript in a couple of weeks, 1st of December, and then, you know, the process will take way over a year before the book is out. Once they've chosen a title for the book and a cover, then, you know, I'll do a big splashy announcement about that. And then the other book, it's not even due until the middle of this coming year. So it's a slower process than I'm used to, because all my other books have been done by local independent publishers, and that's fast. Because the editorial board is one person, and that person is also the editor. And in the case of my last three books, it's a place called Skybridge Publishing. And she does it all. She does all of it for me. And then it's done, and it's fast. So I give her the manuscript, and she spends, you know, maybe 6 weeks editing, making sure it's back and forth good and clean and makes sense and has all the required Oxford commas, which she loves. And then it goes off to get printed. So it's fast. So I'm having to be very patient about working with larger publishers, but terribly, terribly grateful to both of them, to Llewellyn and Red Wheel Weiser, for taking me on as a writer.
Nice. Cool.
Excellent. So it won't be till a while down the road, so that's okay, though. We will.
It is. And once these two manuscripts go into those publishers, I've got an Appalachian one that is close to my heart called The Ragged Wound, Tending the Soul of Appalachia. And it's really looking at some of the deep-seated Appalachian issues and how we work organically to figure out how to save the people of the region.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a huge undertaking.
Yes. Well, we are past 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I guess it's time for...
Well, gosh, it is always such a pleasure to talk to you two, to see you. You know, we saw each other this summer, and then I guess before that we saw each other at Hallowed Homecoming last October.
We did. Yeah, it was. And that was just a great, I mean, it was wet and rainy, and Jeanette was in a wheelchair and laid up on the...
Yes, golly.
You know, her... holding court up there by the fireplace.
Is that how you saw it?
Yeah.
I was on pain meds. So.
But it was a really good weekend. I really had a good time.
It really was. How was it this year? Good attendance?
We did. We had really good attendance.
Excellent.
And we didn't get rain until overnight, Saturday night.
Right.
And it cleared up Sunday by noon. So it rained in the morning. So we waited until... So we actually got to do a bonfire at the Bonfire Circle on Friday and Saturday night.
Oh, how nice.
2 years. I mean, the last 2 years we weren't able to do bonfires because it was too wet. And
right.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. We could do bonfires this year. Our fire guy was very happy that he could do fires. So that was cool. Yeah. We had a good time with Amy.
Is Amy?
Yeah,
Amy. Yeah. Oh, she's so much fun. I love that girl.
Yeah. So.
And she's another author that I recommend. She's just finished her second book.
Yep.
And it just came out in October on Incenses.
Yes.
So. Incenses. Yeah, she's a good one. You know, we're blessed in our community with some really excellent, wonderful people who also are fun to be around.
Yeah, and there is a new wave of people that are writing and teaching that they are not necessarily the BNPs of yore because many of them are no longer alive. And if you have a store or you do a little festival or something, I highly recommend kind of poking around and looking for some of these other folks. Just because they're not a big name doesn't mean that they don't have something relevant to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Well,
it's always,
you.
Always good to talk to y'all, always.
Well, thank you. And we'd like to thank you for showing up tonight and thank everyone listening now and listening later. And what all do we have going on coming up, Mr. Dave? We've got, let's see, this Thursday. So we have some of them. Our other shows coming up this month are David's going to open up the list of
because there's
stuff.
Too much going on.
There's a lot of stuff.
Don't necessarily remember it.
And our show tends to be offset from Circle Talk, so next week will be a new Circle Talk. And that's Deborah Rose, who's a Circle Minister, does that every week. Selena has a new show.
Let's see, we're into So next up, we got Saturday is Paganos del Mundo.
Is that Spanish or Portuguese?
It's I think it's in Spanish. And on Sunday, we have a replay of one of Selena's old programs from Nature Mystic. She's talking about the powers of the crone. And next Tuesday on Circle Talk with Deborah Rose, she gets Arthur Hines. Arthur's been going through a lot of stuff the past couple of years, and it's really been hard to get him on the show, among which was the death of his lovely wife. So this will be the first time he's been on Circle Talk in a couple of years.
Like 3 years.
It's been a few, yeah. Yep. So we're really, that'll be cool. So Deborah Rose, we get to talk to him on Tuesday. And then Selena has revamped her shows on Wednesdays now. Instead of being Divining Dreams, it is now called Nature Spirituality. And on Wednesday, she's talking about celebrating nature's diversities.
Cool.
Next week. So that's kind of next week's plan.
The lineup. So
yeah.
Make sure you...
all on the Circle Sanctuary website, circlesanctuary.org. Click on Our Work and then click on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts. You get the whole list there. You're on Facebook, we're on CSN Podcasts on Facebook.
Yep.
We're also Twitter and Spotify and all the other.
And if you look at other Circle Sanctuary group pages, we also post our shows, upcoming shows there.
Yeah.
As well as other places, and we are on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and there's some others.
Evox.
Yeah, I think TuneIn has us too, so we're all over the place.
All your favorite streaming sources.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Cool.
So what are you going to take us out with tonight, Dave?
So I was poking around to see what we had uploaded on our musical library here, and I was thinking of something from Kellyanna, who's really cool. Thank You, Mother, by Kellyanna. So we want to thank you, Byron, for hanging out with us tonight and spending some time with us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
And a great time. Let's see. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We talked about where we can be heard.
And look for our shows next month. Next month is for the December full moon, it is called the cold moon. That's sort of a duh, but it's actually the name of the December moon. And I like to have the names of each moon for each month. And as I saw it, I'm like, yeah, duh.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
So we'll do a full moon show and... then at the end of the year, we're going to have a show on the beginning of the year activity, magical stuff, like letting go of stuff you don't want and bringing in things that you want to
focus on. Year stuff. Yeah, it's a whole New Year's resolution kind of idea, right?
Yep.
Yep. Cool. Okay. Ready to go?
Yep.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
Have a good night. Stay warm, everybody. It's cold. Stay warm. Snuggle with somebody. Have some hot chocolate if you can. Hot tea if you prefer.
Or a hot toddy.
Or a hot toddy if that's your inkling. All righty. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Mother, for the earth that is your body. Thank you, Mother, for the earth that is your body. Thank you, Mother, for the earth that is your body. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, Mother, for the air that is your sweet breath. Thank you, Mother, for the air that is your sweet breath. Thank you, Mother, for the air that is your sweet breath. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, Mother, for your love. For the fire of your spirit. Thank you, Mother, for the fire of your spirit. Thank you, Mother, for the fire of your spirit. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, Mother, for your love. For the water of your sacred womb. Thank you, Mother, for the water of your sacred womb. Thank you, Mother, for the water of your sacred womb. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, Mother, for your love. Thank you, sky.
Thank you, sky.
Thank you, ground.
Thank you, ground.
Thank you, Mother, won't you spin me around?
Won't you spin me
around?
Thank
you, sky.
Spin
thank
me
you, ground. Thank you, Mother, won't you spin
for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.